Welcome to the Royal College of General Practitioners Essential Knowledge Update podcast. My name is Dr. Sally Higginbottom, and today I'm interviewing Dr. Naheed Kazmi, a GP based in Coventry and an RCGP clinical advisor. We're talking about the recent update on contact dermatitis. Hello, Naheed.
Hello.
So tell me a bit about this guidance. Where has it come from?
This guidance is from the British Association of Dermatologists. It's a new one that was published in 2017. Because this is really geared towards the specialists, it's focusing on secondary care management. The Primary Care Dermatological Society reviewed it, and this module is basically condensed into the bits that are most relevant to us in general practice.
I see. So this is a more primary care focused part of the guidance. So let's start right at the beginning. What's the difference between eczema and dermatitis?
There's really no difference. It's more or less the same thing. Eczema is used as a more general sort of term, but basically dermatitis is inflammation, and contact dermatitis is an inflammatory reaction in response to something from the outside. What this module describes is that there are basically two kinds of contact dermatitis. There's the irritant one, which is without the cell-mediated immune response. And then there's the allergic one, which is actually the complete cell-mediated type 4 hypersensitivity reaction. And then just to make it more interesting, they can coexist. So you can have a bit of the irritation and a bit of the allergy part as well.
Which is more common, the allergic response or the irritant response? What do we see most?
The irritant response is more common, much more common. Probably about 80% tends to be the irritant.
So typically, I'm trying to think of patients I've seen. This is a hairdresser who comes in with sore hands as a result of spending all day with chemicals on her hands. Is that the sort of irritation we're thinking of?
Yes, and of course, we've all seen patients who've had allergies to hair dye. That's a pretty common thing where they've been exposed a few times and then, you know, once they've developed that immune response, they have a fairly marked contact dermatitis. Reaction.
Yeah. And thinking about common things we actually see, so nickel allergy I've seen a few times, and classically where you've got someone, the button on their jeans has given them a little red patch just on the bottom of their abdominal wall. What are the other common allergies that we see in day-to-day practice?
Well, as you said, it tends to be hairdressers, isn't it, with exposure to the chemicals. And then fragrances as well can cause quite marked contact dermatitis. Not so common here in this country, but I've seen a lot of it in the US, is poison ivy contact dermatitis, which is really very painful and severe.
So that'll be when someone's been doing some gardening and coming to contact with poison
yes.
ivy.
Yes, absolutely. Poison ivy or poison oak.
Ah, interesting. So while people can often avoid known triggers, pretty tricky if your job involves working with a particular allergen or irritant. And there's quite a bit in the module about occupational contact dermatitis.
Yes, and I think that's probably the hardest one to treat because it's quite difficult to avoid it. In fact, actually, skin disease is the second most common occupational disease after musculoskeletal. Obviously, it will interfere with work. They say that up to 61% of people who've had occupational contact dermatitis will have missed work. That's quite a lot of people, isn't it?
That is, absolutely. Is there something we can recommend to help these patients?
Well, probably the most important thing is to educate them. That's probably the most important part of managing this. And then general skincare, which applies to everybody, you know, making sure that you're not using any soaps or detergents. They might not be the cause of the sensitivity, but they'll definitely make it worse. And then skin protection, so using barriers and emollients. So there's really three parts of this management.
Okay. And when you're assessing a patient who comes in with eczema or dermatitis, or it might be a contact dermatitis, how do you approach it? What sort of questions do you ask? What sort of history do you take?
I think a very detailed history of their own personal exposure, that's really important. And whether they've had a previous history of atopy or eczema, particularly as a child, if they've had anything like that, any family history of atopy. Then you'd like to know a little bit more about the timing of the exposure, exactly what products have been used, a full detail of what exactly they're using on their skin. Is it related to work? Does it get worse when they're at work? Is it better when they're on holiday? And is it made worse by sun exposure? So these are the kind of things that I'd like to know, really.
The module talks about the Dermatology Quality of Life Index, and I have to be honest and say I've never used it. Do you use these sorts of numerical tools, or are they more research and secondary care use, do you think?
To be honest, I haven't used it either. I did download it, and I think it is quite useful for people who have got fairly severe symptoms. But if you look at it, it actually, I think it would take a bit of time for a patient to fill that in. And perhaps in primary care, we really don't have that much time. It might be worth posting it to patients, I suppose, or having them fill it in the waiting room.
Yes, that's a thought. I guess my question is always, how does it change your decision making or your management? I guess it might help guide who you referred, perhaps, if you detected it was more severe in terms of its impact. Because that's always the problem with skin disease, isn't it? The impact on the patient and the appearance to the doctor are often very disconnected. That quite severe disease might be tolerated quite well in some patients, and quite mild disease objectively might have a huge impact in other patients.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And so, yes, and certainly in those people. But really, I mean, referral should be considered if really you're pretty sure that it is an allergen and they can't actually avoid it.
Yeah,
it's okay. Not getting better.
So I was going to come to who we refer and what we do, because management of contact dermatitis is essentially a secondary care thing, according to this guideline. But waiting lists can be terribly long. And actually, we manage quite a lot of the short-term reactions in primary care. What do you tend to do when someone comes in and you think this might be a contact dermatitis?
I think if from the history, if I can get a pretty good idea of what it is, then I would really focus on those three things that I mentioned earlier, which is the patient education, the skin care, and the skin protection. And I would sort of do as much as possible avoidance of the irritant or the allergen. And in our area, definitely waiting time is pretty long for dermatology referrals. So I would definitely try to manage in primary care first and only refer a certain number of people.
But patch testing is the definitive way to identify the allergens. But who do we refer for testing?
Those people who don't respond to our treatment, or who they've had atopic dermatitis for some time and then it suddenly becomes quite difficult to control, and it's just persistent and not getting any better. I think it's also worth thinking about it in people where it's definitely affecting their ability to work.
Yes, that has such a huge impact on people's lives, doesn't it? And I guess the other occupational group we have to think about sometimes are people who work in chemicals in building or construction are often very badly affected, aren't they, if cement or those sorts of reactions are occurring.
Yes, and of course, healthcare workers too. Latex allergies is not always an anaphylaxis. Sometimes it's just a contact dermatitis as well.
I was thinking about that the other day. One of our nurses had a big problem a few years ago with latex allergy. And interestingly now, across our practice, we don't have anything with latex in them. And over the last few years, I think we've got better at removing that potential trigger for people. I don't know if that's your experience as well.
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, I think they have changed the content of latex in the rubber gloves as well and reduced the one that used to be particularly allergenic.
That's great, because actually my reading of the module is that once you've got this sort of contact dermatitis, it is incredibly difficult to treat long term. I was struck by the proportion of patients that get completely better is really quite small. And so allergen avoidance long term is really the only strategy. Was that your reading of it?
Yes, and only about a quarter get complete resolution, which is, if you think about it, is not very many, isn't it? And in fact, 50% go on to have long term intermittent symptoms. I mean, they can change their jobs, and sometimes we have to advise them, really. But from reading the module also, it goes on to say that even when they change their job, sometimes these allergies can persist.
Yes, it's a real lifetime problem for some people. I'm really struck, as always, when reading dermatological stuff about the amount of emollient which we should be prescribing for patients. And the module mentions 500 grams a week for an adult with a widespread dermatitis. Do you find that happens in practice?
I don't think patients, no matter what we tell them, I don't think that they actually use that much, do they? Because certainly we're not prescribing that much. They're not asking for it. 500 grams is, you know, it's quite a big pot, really, isn't it?
It is. I mean, practically speaking, I think I tend to have had most success when I prescribe a variety of different shapes and sizes pots for different occasions. So patients might have a little tube in their work bag and a pump by the sink at home and another pump by the sink at work, so they can use it wherever they are, as opposed to just so trying to make it as convenient as possible. I don't know if you've found any good tips for helping people to use their emollients as much as we would like them to.
You're absolutely right. The other thing is, of course, that they shouldn't be used for too long because they do get infected, don't they, with bacteria. So then they can actually make the dermatitis worse. So really what they recommend is that you should use a spoon or maybe a wooden stick or something to apply it rather than using your fingers.
Yes.
And the smaller, if you've got small pots, then they'll be used up more quickly, isn't it?
I think that's right, because on a practical level, I've been told this guidance a few times, and I think there's no way most adults are going to carefully spoon out their emollient in real life on a regular basis. So I think for many people, it might be worth thinking about whether there is a cost-effective pump that you can use. Because actually, as you say, once you've got bacterial contamination of your pot, you're doing more harm than good. Yeah, so we need to be careful with that. So in terms of the module as a whole, was there anything that surprised you as you worked through it?
I think I was surprised at how poor the prognosis is, that the outcomes are really not that great. Because we tend to think if it's an allergy, avoid it and that's it, you know. But in fact, it seems like the both cosmetics and fragrance allergies increasing because they've allowed higher quantities of certain chemicals.
That was certainly my big surprise. And I think we might need to try to help people access occupational health services much earlier, given that three quarters are not going to get better. So people might need early and good advice on how to continue with their careers. Well, thank you very much, Naheed. And thank you for listening to this podcast from the Royal College of GPs.
Thank you. Okay.